Welcome to Hochoka Podcast.
Someone you know has gone missing. What should you do? Hello, Mataki Api, and welcome to Hochoka, here at the center of St. Joseph's Indian School's campus. I'm Scott Wooster, today's Hochoka host. Today, we visit with Allison Morissette, South Dakota's Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Coordinator, and Mary Beth Holsworth, Human Trafficking Coordinator. Mary Beth works out of the Peer Office, while Allison works out of the Rapid City Office of the South Dakota State's Attorney General's Office. Both were appointed in November of 2022. Allison and Mary Beth, welcome to Hochoka. A very warm welcome to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll start this off as we get to know each other and our viewers get to know you. I just want a real quick thumbnail sketch of who you are, where you're from, just a little bit about who you are, maybe a minute's worth of time, and then we'll dig into some deeper questions. So do you want to start, Allison?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Allison Morissette. I grew up in Martin, South Dakota, and graduated from Bennett County High School, went to Red Cloud as well. As soon as I graduated, I went to the military, came back and got my degree, started working at the Pennington County Sheriff's Office as a correctional officer. Then I transitioned into the state's attorney's office, and I ran their adult diversion program there for a few years, and then I transitioned to this new position.
Okay. So, in November, too long ago.
Correct, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And Mary Beth?
I'm Mary Beth Holsworth, and I'm the Human Trafficking Coordinator. My journey kind of started about 2009 when two of my sons were sexually abused by an uncle, and that just sent me on a mission to figure out what I could do to change the state. So I did a whole bunch of things with a bunch of amazing people since then. And then about 4 years ago, I worked at the South Dakota Women's Prison as a reentry coach, and I was able to help a lot of women work through trauma that they had been through, kind of similar to what I did with my sons. And then, yeah, I was hired as the Human Trafficking Coordinator and started at the same time Allie did, and here we are.
Excellent. Very good. Glad to have you both in those positions. It'll be tough work, but you hopefully can make a difference. That's great.
Absolutely.
So, when we do the Hochoka podcast, one of the primary audience that we're geared to is the families of the students that are here at St. Joe's. We have about 160 students. Sometimes we range a little more than that, sometimes a little less, but we're trying to give some information to those families to help them guide their kids through life and to partner with us as a team. And I know that in these roles that you have, they tie in so well with each other because they overlap so much. But each of you has, I'm sure, ideas for preventative measures or creating a preventative environment that so that our youth aren't vulnerable to going missing or to abuse. So considering that the families are the ones who are watching, what kind of advice might you have for the families? And you can go wherever you want to fill space.
So prevention is a huge passion of mine, obviously, because it was one thing that I wrestled with not being able to give my sons. And so that was a big part of why we started. And when I say we, it's the boys and I, why we started doing that work. It's just because we didn't want that to happen to anyone else if possible. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the prevention piece of it is just making sure that even as a community, not only for the families, but for everyone in the community to really be able to surround the people. You know, surrounding each other. We always say that human trafficking and the MMIP issues is really an exploitation of vulnerability. Anything that we can do, whether it's strengthening resources in the communities, making sure that there's good support systems, giving prevention tools, making sure that resilience is a main focus, those are going to be a big part of what we're trying to focus on in these roles.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, going across the state within the first couple of months of our position, a lot of the communities are wanting the education and that training within the school systems or, you know, within the community itself. So we think that an educated community is a dangerous community, just because it makes the perpetrators or predators, you know, less likely to be there because the community knows what to look for.
And it reminds me a little bit of science fiction writer Ray Bradbury had this quote. He said, it's like jumping off of a cliff and building your wings on the way down, which is sort of what you're doing, right? And, you know, in the job interviews, you're given a blank sheet of paper and said, this is your title. This is what we need to do. We need to protect kids. What does that involve for you as you get started in a brand new position?
You know, even whenever we were interviewing for the position, the job description was so vague, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my first interview, I said, okay, so what are you guys wanting from this position? everybody on the interview team had something different. And so that's kind of what we're realizing, too, is each community need is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the eastern side, the western side, you know, smaller communities, larger rural communities. So the first few months we went across the state, we just wanted to get familiar with, you know, the reservations,
mm-hmm.
To make that proper introduction,
mm-hmm.
building those relationships, and saying what we could offer, what they needed to help build up their communities.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, educating is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so just going around and introducing ourselves and seeing what each community really, really wants from the state, from these positions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important, too, because a lot of the reservations sometimes feel like they're not heard at a state level.
Mm-hmm.
And so for my position specifically, it was really important for me to go out personally and hear those needs from people. So we want to be able to, you know, if we can't give them the tools that they need, we want to be able to partner with somebody who can. So that's why the relationship building is so big in both of these positions, because we don't want to be able to just have us give you those tools. We want to build those relationships with the other organizations to be able to connect them together, because this effort is statewide.
Yep.
You know, it's not just our positions alone. It's everybody in this together, and it'll, you know, be better that way. So
it sounds like there's two things that you came in thinking about doing. One, first, building relationships across the state. Two, asking a lot of questions.
Oh, absolutely,
and
yeah.
Finding out what people want from the community.
Yeah, and, you know, I am new to this.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of nonprofits, grassroots organizations who have been doing this work a lot longer than, you know, I've even been born.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm excited to learn from them, and I'm always open to criticism. I'm always open to, you know, new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And wanting to hear everybody. And that's what I want my office to be, is open and transparent with the state. So
that's great. Awesome.
Yeah.
And what do you think? 6 months, you're getting into it now?
Yeah, I felt like I had a pretty good idea of what I wanted to do in this position. In fact, I was probably the weirdo that showed up with a very well-researched and cited document telling them what I thought that it needed to
an
be.
An agenda.
Like, yeah, I did. Yeah. It was kind of crazy. But
yeah.
But it was very loosely based off of what I had already done in the state for child sexual assault
mm-hmm.
prevention. Of course, I wanted to learn what everyone else was doing and what we could do to support them. But I also knew already from being involved in so much trauma work where we were missing so many things.
Mm-hmm.
So the other neat thing about both of our positions is even though that they're very unique issues, they are very interrelated. So one thing that we try to do moving forward is we really try to be kind of cross-trained. You know, she wants to be aware of human trafficking type issues, and I definitely want to be aware of MMIP issues.
Mm-hmm.
We really have a good working relationship where we really try to support each other through this. And I think that's, you know, that's just going to make us be able to go a lot further and have more of an impact as we move forward. So
yeah.
It's really exciting.
So I am the father of, well, I have four daughters, right, that are indigenous. They're Sichangu Lakota daughters. And the older three are grown up, and they've given me five Takoja. So I've got five granddaughters. And then I have a daughter who's indigenous. She's 15, and she goes to school here. So I've got a lot of skin in the game as far as having kids that I want to be protected and want to make sure that only good things are happening to them. What message would you give, and we could just say the 15-year-old especially, but what message would you give to her as far as how she can protect herself?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, part of taking this position is, you know, I am a light-skinned Native American. Mm-hmm. My little sister is not.
Okay.
She is very dark-complected. So she experiences things that I don't experience, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So just to touch back to what you're asking, would be the same thing that I tell her all the time. And the reason I took this position was to be educated on the topics. You know, South Dakota is such a rural area, and don't be naive. You know, don't say, oh, yeah, you know, this isn't going to happen to me. This won't affect me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be educated on it and be aware. And, you know, going to Sioux Falls or, you know, even in Rapid City, they're not small communities anymore. You know, this mm-hmm. happens everywhere.
Yep.
So just to be aware and be, like I said, educated is the best thing to be on it. You know, MMIP or MMIW is such a broad topic that there are so many areas that you can never be overeducated on it.
I think for our kids and our youth, especially in the teens, I mean, well, and even younger, because so many kids have access to cell phones now and technology and mm-hmm. video games that have access to chat options, you know, for especially for the human trafficking piece, but really any vulnerability. That's a huge target area for a lot of kids to find themselves in situations that are very dangerous. So, mm-hmm. but I also hesitate to put too much responsibility on our youth to stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we started the child sexual assault work so long ago, that was one big thing that we said is this is not a kid problem, this is an adult problem. And so while we want our kids to know that they have a voice, we really need to make sure that all the adults involved in our kids' life know that they can be supportive of the children. Mm-hmm. For a big thing for my kids, they were 8 and 5 at the time. They just knew that they could come to me for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important for our youth to know is that they have some safe adults in their lives that they can go to.
Mm-hmm.
But then especially for the prevention part of it, that's where the adults need to step in and say, you know, we're going to be aware of what our kids are doing online. We're going to be aware of the people who have access to our children. We're going to make sure that, you know, whether it's a school or a sports organization or something, making sure that there's limiting access between one adult, one child. There's always another person there. There's just so many things that we can do to begin to take the steps to make sure our kids are safe without putting all that responsibility on our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Becoming a mom here shortly, it does get those questions running, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's also self-worth, you know, mm-hmm. letting them know that they're worthy of reporting. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge thing is, you know, we're realizing that a lot of the vulnerability piece is going underreported.
One thing that we say for adults is, you know, have the kids in your life, whether they're nieces, nephews, grandchildren, whatever, siblings, younger siblings, you know, let you know anytime that there's any touch because kids shouldn't have to sort out whether that's good or bad,
mm-hmm.
you know, letting them know that if they have someone reach out to them online, you know, because that's how so many of the MMIP situations with kids start out is, you know, it could be a relative or someone online that they think they know, but they don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just progresses to something else. And having that open line of communication to empower kids to realize that they have that worth. And that they don't have to look for validation from outside sources, that they can get that from inside sources is so powerful to them.
What do we do when something unthinkable happens? When a child is abducted, a child's human trafficked, a kid goes missing or is murdered, what do we do? Where do we turn for resources? And what's that important first step?
The first step right away is always contacting law enforcement, mm-hmm. local law enforcement, and getting a report filed if the person did go missing or is even trafficked, or you feel like is trafficked. And then so as far as resources go, I mean, you can always reach out to us. That's what we're here for. Like I said, you know, making those relationships and being able to point you in the right direction. Just because you are in Chamberlain and I am in Rapid, we want to build those relationships within the community so mm-hmm. we can, you know, forward you onto them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then also, I guess for the human trafficking component or even just the abuse component, again, that vulnerability, you know, anytime that someone, whether it's adult or child, does disclose something to you, you know, being supportive, believing that person's story. And that's so hard because so many times, like Ali said, these are people that we know, love, and trust
mm-hmm.
or prominent members in our community. And it's really hard to hear someone say that, but most people aren't going to make up stories like that,
mm-hmm.
especially children. They just don't have that knowledge. And so we really have to you know, stay calm.
Right.
And then contact the appropriate authorities, of course, but really just continue to support that person who came forward with whatever information it is. And then also, especially on the MMIP issue, just really supporting the family members, because that's a huge component of where people slip through the cracks. So.
And you mentioned supporting the family. What do you mean by that exactly? How do you support the family?
So, of course, I think both of us have different components of this because the MMIP family members need a lot of support. But then also, so say that a child or a young adult or anyone has been trafficked and they come back to the community, say that, or even just sexually abused, they come back to the community or whatever, the non-offending family members are going to need a tremendous amount of support.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to sound so heavy on the child sexual assault part of it, but that's just a good example of, because so often human trafficking is either labor or sex trafficking. And so one thing that was really hard for my family is just I didn't know what to do with mm-hmm. that. And so I was left to navigate that entire system by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much like when someone receives, I've heard people say that it's very similar to when someone receives a cancer diagnosis. A lot of family and friends in the community don't really know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of is like, I don't know what to say, and I don't want to say the wrong thing, so I'm just not going to say anything.
Right.
And so that was very similar to what my family and I experienced. It's like, I don't know what to say. This is really awkward. And I think anytime that you have a person who has experienced a lot of trauma, people don't know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think just making sure that the non-offending family members, the victim themselves, knows that, hey, I'll stop by and I'll scrub your cabinets. And mm-hmm. I'll reorganize
Great.
Your pantry.
Right.
I will bring you a meal. You know, you don't always have to have the answers, but the more we can build up our communities to be supportive, the stronger those communities are going to be.
And so we are partnering with some of the grassroots organizations to get them trained on aftercare,
mm-hmm.
Because like you had said, the families will go through, like a murder trial. Or, like a domestic violence trial, stuff like that. And then afterwards, all of those services just disappear, and the
mm-hmm.
family is dropped.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that we're focusing on, too, is aftercare for the families. And so far for MMIP, we haven't found a lot of that across the state. We do have counseling services and stuff like that, but we're trying to take a more cultural approach for that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I like that.
Yeah. And I think understanding that trauma just doesn't end when the person is recovered
mm-hmm.
or when the funeral is done. Or anything, or when, if you're lucky enough to get a prosecution, that's not when the trauma ends. The trauma goes on for a lifetime. And I think a lot of people who haven't really stepped into that, they don't understand that. So just making sure that, we keep rallying around those people that are hurting the most. And that's just going to create overall a stronger system of healing. Instead of just being like, oh, everything's done now, so they're
mm-hmm.
good to go.
Because mm-hmm.
that's not how it works.
So if like you say, the unthinkable happens and the first step is reaching out to law enforcement and then a family wants further help, could they contact you, either of your offices directly in order to be steered in a certain direction? You could share with them resources that you've built up with
yeah.
folks in communities?
Yeah, like if somebody goes missing in a smaller community, we're trying to get those local grassroots organizations who do on-the-ground searches,
yeah.
like search parties, to help get the posters out, help share and spread the word,
yeah.
Especially on social media. That seems to be the biggest way to get the word out.
Right.
So.
And you can point them in yep. those directions directly from your office.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yep.
you're an office of one?
I am.
Okay, right. So that's a big chore, but
yeah. It is, yeah. And we've had some families reach out and we were able to point them in the right direction, like I said, to get those search parties going. But with it being such a new position, I'm learning as they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just hoping to get more understanding and more resources.
Yeah.
And so, if anybody is listening and they want to be that resource in the community, feel free to reach out.
Absolutely.
I'm always here, like I said, to learn from the people who've been doing it longer
yeah.
than me. And I know that just because I've gone to communities, I haven't touched base with every organization
right.
in that community.
But you're building your team.
Correct.
Yeah, that's the first step.
And I think one thing that we should mention is we're also very aware that there has been a lot of gaps in relationships between you know, the boots on the ground, law enforcement, victims, you know, there's just a lot of gaps in there. And we also want to be cognizant of the fact that there's a lot of people that do feel like they've been let down by law enforcement. And so that has been a huge focus of us, too. And we've had law enforcement reach out to us saying we want to be better and do better. So that's been a huge point of focus for us, is to just make sure that these professionals that are doing this work have the tools. So that's something that we're really trying to improve.
Yeah. And if, you know, especially in this position specifically, a lot of the Native Americans feel like they've been forgotten about or their cases just dropped, fell between the cracks, whatever it is for them. If they don't know who to contact in their, you know, jurisdiction where they're at, you know, reach out to me and I'm willing to reach out and, you know, see where their case is at, if there's anything new with it, stuff like that. And like Mary Beth said, you know, law enforcement has been amazing for this and in wanting to build that transparency within the community. So if they have any question that they feel, you know, they can't get the answers to, always reach out to my office or Mary Beth's office and we will point you in that right direction.
That's great. We're all part of a team. I just want to say on my behalf and on behalf of St. Joe's, thanks for being here today, Wopila, for coming and joining us here at Ho-Choka. We can throw a team together, and it's nice to have you guys at the helm kind of leading the way with this. So we'll do what we can to keep those Wakayusha safe, right?
Absolutely. Thank you for having us today.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you both.
Thank you.
And thank you to our viewers here, and thank you for joining us at the center of St. Joseph's Indian Schools campus in Ho-Choka, where we talk about issues that are central to Native American education today. Until next time, stay centered.